Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am delighted to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together for 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you or in a chair or on the sofa, which both are equally as spiritual as sitting on the floor. And if you are in such a seat, I'm pointing over here because there's my couch, sit with your feet flat on the floor, unless that hurts, in which case, just make yourself comfortable. So this video, this short talk before we sit, is about the fourth of the four qualities of mind that cultivate compassion. There's so much disturbance right now for really good reason, fear, anger, discomfort. Of course, me too. And our topic, cultivating the mind of compassion, is particularly necessary right now and particularly difficult. Because there's some momentary refuge that comes with hatred and blaming and judgment. And you know what? You can hate whoever and whatever you want. I am not one of those people that's like, don't say hate. It's a bad word. You know, some things we hate. You're entitled to your judgments, 100%. Anyone who tells you otherwise, you should excuse yourself. And I can't remember what the third thing is I said. I think criticism. You can criticize whatever you want. There's only one thing that we can't do. In the opinion of myself, hating, judging, criticizing, designating these people as enemies, these people as friends, absolutely. Some people are your enemies and some people are your friends. So we're not talking about compassion as some kind of, that's the word I can use without being obscene. We're not talking about being some kind of a person who's taken up residence in La La Land. Compassion has nothing to do with La La Land or being nice or liking anyone. Compassion has to do with being awake and present and attuned. And those are the qualities of the compassionate mind. It started with affection for this world. Now, sometimes some things we like, some things we don't. Again, sure. But affection here doesn't mean I like the people that are killing people as much as the people that are helping people. That'd be insane. Affection for the world means I still care about this world. I still care about you. I still care about myself. I still care about our planet. Even though there are tremendous obstacles and difficulties, I still care. I'm kind of making myself cry right now because I really do. And I am certain that you do too. The second quality of the compassionate mind is called faith in the right situations. I look at this as having meaning on the relative plane where we live and the absolute plane where all phenomena are one. Thus I have heard. On the relative plane, faith in the right situations means you vet things, you pay attention, you don't believe everything you hear, and you don't dismiss everything you hear based on preconceived notions. You are discerning and sharp with your intelligence about what to trust and what to do to be of benefit in this world, which I know you want to do. On the absolute plane, you could say, faith in the right situations has something to do with acknowledging that everything changes. There is nothing to hold on to, which that's no fun. However, it's true. So truth is more fun than fun sometimes. It means living with the endless ebb and flow. Sometimes feels horrible. Sometimes feels great. sometimes just feels ordinary, but not deciding, okay, this is it. Now I'm going to stay here, because you can't. So faith in the right situation is, in one sense, faith in the never-ending flow of chaos and genius and uncertainty and discomfort and joy. These streams are always, these tributaries are always feeding into the stream of our existence. That was damn poetic that I just said. I just made that up. And I think it's true. So flowing with is, in one sense, a demonstration of faith in the right situations. The third quality of the compassionate mind is called compassion for sentient beings. Now, that means all beings, and not just human beings, animal beings, fish beings, insect beings, all beings, sentient. Compassion for sentient beings. Now, I'm going to go circle back to something I said in the beginning about you can hate, you can be enraged, all the things. There's one thing you can't do, and here we're going to come to that thing. Compassion for sentient beings doesn't mean I feel very loving towards people that start wars in other countries, and I don't. I don't. Compassion for sentient beings begins and ends with the recognition that you are no different than whomever or whoever you love and admire, and whomever you despise and distrust. We're not different. Of course, we are different, but on one level, we're not. And remaining in the recognition of our commonality is the seed syllable of compassion. So are you a despot who will invade a foreign country? No. Have you ever trespassed on someone else's territory and taken something because you wanted it? I have. So acknowledging that capability, of course, you're not going to roll out your tanks and stuff, but I have steamrolled. It's not the same, but I recognize it. I have taken things, especially in my younger days. I was never a stealer or a shoplifter, but yeah, I'm like, I don't think they need that, that kind of thing. I've made up bleep to convince others of my point of view. I might not have known I was doing it, although sometimes I probably did. But yeah, I'm that kind of human too. You are that kind of human too. So again, you can hate, be enraged, attempt to destroy what is hurtful to others. Good. But you can't put other people in the class of them and hold yourself and the people that think like you in the category of us. No us, no them. Well, only us, you could say. So that's one way of thinking of compassion for sentient beings. I hope that makes sense, and I hope that's useful. The fourth factor is called bravery. And of course, we need that right now, because it's so tempting to want to hide from all of the, I don't even know what the word is, problems. This is a little too weak. The atrocities that are occurring in our world and on our planet. Hey. So bravery, in this sense, and this is why it's a support for compassion, means developing some sense of tolerance for your own discomfort. Because if we can't be a little bit accepting of our discomfort, it's very hard to be compassionate to anyone except the people we already like. So developing some sense of being able to abide with your uncertainty, your fear, your all the emotions, anger and hatred and all those things. Very important. Very important. So we live in a world that is devoted. I mean, I should say first world humans, including myself. We live in a world where everything is about being comfortable. And when there's discomfort, we want to get rid of it. Okay, that's cool. But we have endless conveniences. I have an electric kettle to boil my water. Why? Is it too hard for me to put a kettle on the sink? I don't know. The other day, I was driving someone else's car and I wanted to put the window down on the driver's side. So I tapped the down window button and it just went down a little bit in my car, which is, you know, a very ordinary car. And in most cars, I guess in the last 6 or 8 years or 10 years, you just tap the driver's side button and the window goes all the way down. So I tapped the button and it only went down a little bit. And for a moment, I was like, what? I need that window to go all the way down. And then I was like, oh my God, is this what I've come to? Me? That I get irritated by this ridiculous thing? Or, you know, you walk up to a door to a building and you're used to, well, it just opens when I show up. But this one you have to push. There can be this moment of, really? I actually have to push this door? Yeah, actually. And so that's how ridiculous our attachment to comfort is. And you know what? Please be comfortable. And don't deny yourself creature comforts as you are able to secure them for yourself, because creature comforts are awesome. But this constant focus on how to make this easier, how do I wall off feelings that make me uncomfortable, either by hiding, my favorite, or I don't know, even our meditation practice can become a hiding place. We think, well, I'm going to meditate so I don't feel bad. It will help you, but it doesn't help in the way we think. So everything seems to be in service of making me more comfortable. So that's cool. That's how our world, you didn't make it, I didn't make it. But to develop some sense of tolerance, first by laughing at yourself, which I think is always indicated, and then by noticing your irritation at discomfort. And that's all you have to do. Don't try to fix it or change it, but like, I should be more comfortable with discomfort. So therefore, you do that. That's not useful because it doesn't work. But beginning to notice what you do really works. Oh, this makes me uncomfortable because I'm scared our planet's going to dissolve. This may, you know, that's far end of the spectrum. This makes me uncomfortable because I want the damn window to go down when I just go tap. Those are not the same thing, but some sense of recognizing your attachment, which is quite ordinary and human and understandable, to your own comfort. That's a great place to start. Now, it can be tempting to go the opposite direction and think, damn it, I'm going to just like turn on the discomfort to 11 and just because I want to be a brave hero. I'm laughing, but I'll tell you why in a second. Nothing to do with this topic, actually. So I'm going to go out in the winter without a coat, making this up. I'm going to watch the news from morning till night because I need to be educated. These are forms of self-aggression. And self-aggression is at odds with bravery. And it's certainly at odds with developing a tolerance for uncertainty and complexity and irritation. So not this, not this. That's why I say just begin with noticing. That in itself is brave. So therefore, it's a really excellent place to start. So affection for this world, faith in the right situations, compassion for sentient beings, and bravery. These are the four qualities of the compassionate mind. So please, I hope this is useful. Of course, that's why I'm doing it. I'd love to know what you think. I guess the last thing I say before I explain why I was laughing about saying brave hero is it's exhausting, y'all. So almost everyone I know is very, very tired right now. It's very hard to be compassionate when you're exhausted. It's much more easy to be irritated and put off, and that's cool. That's not a criticism. That's human. Where do we refill our tank when we're exhausted? Well, you could go to sleep. That would be awesome. You could do something that refreshes you. Spend time with people you care about, who care about you. Stare at the sky. Read a book. I once had the privilege of interviewing the great Vipassana teacher, insight meditation teacher, Tara Brach. This was some years ago, and I asked her, Tara Brach, what do you say to your students who are experiencing compassion fatigue? Like, I'm tired of trying to be good, a good person and have an open heart. Without hesitation, she said, Sangha, which means community. I tell them Sangha. We need each other. We need to feel connected heart to heart. And of course, she was absolutely right. That is what refuels us. Even if you're just sitting in a Zoom room or a room, and you don't say anything, to be together with people who are on a path, whatever that path is that you share, it's incredibly strengthening. So wherever you can find Sangha, please do. Please think about joining the Open Heart Project Sangha. It is an extremely wonderful group of people all over the world who are dedicated to their practice and to cultivating the mind of compassion, and all with extremely independent mindedness. It's a group of independent thinkers. So anyway, you're invited, and in any way you can find it, this or that, this maybe, or however it is that you connect with others. When you're feeling vulnerable and tired, seek out your Sangha. So, okay, let's sit together. Please establish your posture. By sitting up straight, declare your dignity. Feel your grace and your goodness. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Because the back is straight and strong, the front body can be soft and open. So let the belly relax, the area around your heart, your shoulders, your throat can all soften. The mouth is closed because you don't have to talk, which is awesome for most people, or for many people, some not so much. But anyway, the mouth is closed because you don't have to talk in either case. So you can let all of the mechanisms of speech relax. The jaw, the tongue, the throat, the inclination to speak can all just settle like snowflakes. The breath is natural in and out through the nose. You already know how to breathe, just keep doing that. The eyes are open, and the gaze is soft and cast down to a spot in front, up to 6 or 8 feet, 6 feet, 2.5 meters or less, given the distance of your screen. Just let the eyes be soft. Let the brow relax. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, which means feel the breath, not notice the breath. Feel what's happening in your body. Feel the expansion on the inhale and the letting go on the exhale. Just let your attention ride the breath. Your mind will continue to make thoughts because that's what it does. No big deal. Most of your thoughts will come and go on their own, and you do not have to do anything about those thoughts. And there's no effort in meditation to stop thinking. I don't know where that idea came from. Ixnay. Thoughts just come and go like birds in the sky. However, if you notice that you become absorbed in a line of thought, to the point where you've forgotten about your breath. Very good to notice that. Notice it. You kind of touch that line of thought with your mind, if that makes sense. In other words, you don't just swat it away. Notice. You can say to yourself silently, thinking, and then just let go. Whatever it is, doesn't matter. Gently come back to this breath and begin again. This is our practice. We'll sit together in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It means a lot. Thank you for practicing with me. That means a lot too. Thank you for practicing together.